I was
looking for a water closet or WC and didn't find it, and so I decided, since I've been looking left and right, that maybe I'll circulate the boat and look only on one side and then go over and look on the other side. But I didn't find it. And so I asked one of the stewards, or one of the people who were working on the boat, where is, in my best English, where is the water closet? And he said, you don't have one. And so I said, where is the WC? We don't have one. And he said, we don't have one, then I guess there isn't one. But what am I going to do? I mean, it's not urgent now, but 6 o'clock tomorrow is when we arrive in England, and I don't think I can wait that long. And by midnight, when the motors were all revved up because the boat was going to leave at midnight, and it was pretty urgent for me to go to the bathroom, I decided we were not supposed to leave our cabins after, I think, 10 o'clock or so. I went up on deck, and there was a waterfall up there that I created. And I was much relieved after that. When we arrived in Harrods, we immediately were put on a train. And I don't know whether this is what I remember is real or if this is a figment of my imagination. But it was a super modern train, as I remember. And there were no compartments. It was just a big carriage. And there were swivel kind of chairs at different places all over this compartment. I don't know if that was really so, but this is what I seem to remember. And I was fascinated by this kind of a train. I'd never seen that kind of train before. And we arrived sometime, I don't know when, but that morning at Liverpool Street Station, and we were taken to a huge hall, and there were children crying, and there were lots of people behind the barrier, and we were told that the names of the children would be called alphabetically, and then whoever name is called should come forward to this desk. And my name at that time was, so my maiden name was Wachenheimer, which is with a W, so I decided it was going to be a long time before my name was called. And so I didn't really pay much attention to the first names being called. But I looked around, you know, because Mrs. Mayer was going to pick me up, and where is she? Which one of these many women is she? And after a while, I got bored with it all and apparently fell asleep sitting on my suitcase. And at some point, I woke up, and there was hardly anybody there. There were only about 2 children left and not many adults. And I started to cry. You know, I've not been picked up. And then somebody came over to me and said, "Who are you?" And I was wearing a tag with my name on it. And they said, "Oh, there you are. We've been looking for you. There is somebody waiting for you." And that's when I met Mrs. Mayer, who was frantic because she'd been waiting and they called my name and nobody responded. And they were worried whether I'd gotten lost somewhere. And she spoke no German, and my English was so limited. I had no idea. She kept on talking to me. I didn't know what she was saying to me. And she took me to the subway, and I don't know what subway station that was. And I know there was a huge, steep escalator that we had to go down, and she just walked ahead of me and assumed I would follow. And I had never been on an escalator before in my whole life. I've never seen one. And I had a suitcase in my hand, or 2 suitcases. No, she had 1 suitcase, and I had another suitcase. But I had a hat, and the hat had an elastic band, but the elastic band had broken, and it was sort of a pillbox. And so I had to carry the hat because otherwise it would have fallen off. And I had a pocketbook, and I never had had a pocketbook before, and an umbrella. And somebody had brought some cookies to the train station for me, and so I had those. And somebody else had brought me a book, and I had that. How am I going to get on this escalator? I need to hold on both railings, and I don't have any free hands. And in the meantime, Mrs. Mayer is down at the bottom, and she's motioning to me and calling to me, and I'm petrified. And other people are coming, and I'm just motioning to them to go onto the escalator. I'm petrified, and I can't get on this thing. And so finally, I decided to put all my belongings. I put those on the escalator, and I figured, Mrs. Mayer is down there. She can take them. And then maybe if I hold on both sides, I'm good. And I did, but it was a really frightening experience for me to go down that escalator. And it was so steep. And then when we got down there, it was noisy. The trains were coming from both directions. And we got on this red subway. It was, at least I remember the train, the carriages seemed to be red. And it was very noisy, and Mrs. Mayer keeps on talking to me. And I mean, not only that I didn't understand English, I couldn't hear because I wasn't used to that kind of noise. And we traveled and traveled and traveled forever, it seemed. And all of a sudden, we come out into the daylight. And I think that was in Hendon. And go a few more stations, and we arrive in Edgware. And we get out of the train, and then she takes a taxi, and we drive to the Rose House, which is on the was on the far end of Edgware, near Mill Hill, I think it is. And the family was waiting for me. They had three children, a daughter, Eunice, I think, who was 19, I think, at the time, and another daughter about the same age as I, whose name I can't remember, and then there was Pamela, who was 2 or 3 years younger. And I shared, I was told I would share a bedroom with the girl that was the same age as I. And I had, you know, all these cookies and chocolates and stuff that people had given me. And so I gave that to Mrs. Rose because you don't take that into your bedroom. I mean, I didn't do that at home, and I didn't know where to put it, so I just gave it to her. And that was the last time I ever saw that. And then Mrs. Mayer talked to Mrs. Rose for a while, and then she left. And I knew that I wouldn't see her until sometime the end of summer or early fall, because they were leaving on Sunday to go on their holiday to France. And I also was told that the next day I would be taken to school by Mrs. Rose to register me for school, and I would probably start school on Monday. And I was very excited about that. And I was getting hungry, but I didn't want to say I'm hungry, and because I only had had breakfast that morning. And I saw them, then the table was set in the kitchen, and they all sat down and they ate, and I was told to go outside and look at the flowers in the yard. And I didn't understand that, but I did. And then when I came back in after I looked at the flowers for a little while, and they said, no, go back out there. And I went back outside, and I stayed outside because I didn't know what else to do. And then finally I was allowed to come back in, and the table was cleared, and I was told to sit down, and I was given 2 pieces of toast and butter and a cup of tea, which I didn't really want, but I was thirsty, but I drank it, and I was hungry, so I ate the toast, and then I thought, well, what will I, maybe that's how one starts a meal in England. And so I just sat and waited. I would get something else. And then they said, no, they said, you're finished. Or they indicated to me that I was finished. And I thought, well, I don't know, but I wasn't too worried yet. And as it turned out, that really basically was my diet for the next 10 weeks. For breakfast, I got a piece of toast and butter and tea. And for lunch, and I used to have to walk home from school, and it was a long walk from school, I got 2 pieces of toast and butter and a cup of tea. And for supper, I got the same, 2 pieces of toast and butter and a cup of tea. And on Sundays, Mr. Rose used to come to and serve all of the family, and me also, a cup of tea and a cookie in bed. And so on Sunday morning, I had did the addition of a cookie and an extra cup of tea. After a while, I got a little bit smarter, because first I drank the tea just plain, and then because there was milk and sugar, and I poured some milk and some sugar in there because I knew that had some nutritious value, so I would get a little bit extra. In school, the children, you know, would have candy or cookies. And they would, of course, offer me some. And I was dying to have some, but I didn't accept it because what could I bring them? I had nothing to bring them. And the chocolates and the cookies that I had brought with me from Germany, I had asked for them, and I was told that they had eaten them, that I had given it to them as a present. And they were all gone. So I had nothing to give to the children, and so I didn't ever take anything.
What were the rest of the family? Were they eating sort of normal food?
Yes.
So was there any explanation given to you for that?
Yes, the explanation was that in Germany I was starving. And now that I see food is plentiful in England, I want everything, and it's not good for me because I need to start to eat, increase my diet slowly for health reasons. And I tried to explain, and it was difficult because I didn't know much English, that I was never hungry in Germany. I never starved. That the only thing that was rationed was butter. And but that didn't mean that I was ever hungry. And what I also found out after a while is that my parents had been sending me things. My mother would make some cookies and send them. But I didn't know that. And they kept them and never told me. And at one point, my parents wrote and said, you know, you don't have to say thank you for the things we send you, but you at least should acknowledge them, because if they don't arrive, we won't send anything anymore. And like one of the things they had sent was a new bathroom for me. And I never got it, but I noticed that this girl who was about my age at one point had a new bathrobe. But I didn't know that that was for me. I just thought she got a new bathrobe. And so I figured it out from what my parents were saying, that apparently these things are arriving, but I'm not getting them. And so I wrote to my parents, please don't send any more of anything, because I have plenty of everything here. I didn't want to ever tell my parents. They never knew what was going on in this family, with what was happening to me, so I didn't want to worry them. And so I said, you know, don't send anything, because it's just, I have too much of everything here. And so my parents didn't send anything anymore. And
Were this family, were they Jewish?
Yes. And I didn't tell the rabbi, I didn't tell anybody, you know, I didn't tell my parents. I think I would have told Mrs. Mayer or Mrs. Simon, but they were in France, and I didn't know where they were in France. And sometime in, I think it was the middle of July, I got a phone call from Mrs. Mayer. She said, we have come back early because it looks like there might be a war, and we didn't want to get caught in France, so we're back. And how are things? And how are you? And for the first time ever, I said, I'm hungry. And it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, so she said, well, when do you eat supper? And I said, it doesn't make any difference. And she said, what do you mean? And then I felt uncomfortable to talk because I was in the Rose home and I didn't know who was listening. And she noticed that I was reluctant to talk. So she said, well, why don't you come and visit us for lunch on Saturday? And Mrs. Rose can give you directions how to get here. You'll have to take the subway. And so, or the underground, I guess you call it in England. And so I said, I can't come. And she said, why can't you come? Are you doing something else? And I said, it costs money, and I don't have any money. I had left with 10 German marks, but I was not going to touch those. Those were when things get really, really bad. And so I was going to use that to go on the subway. And so she said, well, don't you get an allowance? Well, I didn't know what that was even. And so she explained to me, doesn't Mrs. Rose give you some money so that you could buy yourself something if you need something or want something? And I said, no. And so she said, well, let me talk to Mrs. Rose. And the two of them talked, and then I was put back on the phone, and I was told that Mrs. Rose would give me some money so I could come to visit her, and then we could talk. And I did go there that Saturday, and I think I ate the whole time that I was there. And I was told, you know, you can eat as much as you want, but, you know, maybe you shouldn't eat that much because you might really get sick. I mean, it's there if you want it. And I said, I don't care if I get sick. I'm going to eat. And I ate. And I told them what was going on. And so Mrs. Mayer was saying, well, school will be out in about 2 weeks. And I'd like you to stay there for the remainder of the school year. And I'll give you some money, and you can buy yourself something on the way to school and on the way home. Don't say anything to the Roses. I will try to find another family for you, and I will handle this. Don't say anything at all to them. And so every day then, on my way to school, on my way from school, I bought myself Cadbury's chocolate, milk chocolate with hazelnuts. I had smelled some of the when some children were eating it, I'd smelled it, and it smelled so good. I wanted that more than anything else, and that's what I ate every single day. And when school was out, I was picked up by Mrs. Mayer and taken to her home because she not yet found another family or was in the process, and then stayed there about a week, and all I did was eat all day long. At night, when I went to bed, she used to give me a big plate full of sandwiches and fresh fruit, and by morning it was all gone. And of course, I had to tell my parents that I had a different address, and my parents then wanted to know why, and then I told them why, and they were very angry with me that I didn't tell them, and that, you know, and it created a problem of trust. That why can they ever believe me when I tell them from here on in? And I promised that I would always be honest and tell them everything. Even if it's bad, I would tell them. And after about a week at Mrs. Mayer's home, I was placed with a second family. And their name was Simmons. And they lived also in Edgeware, but at the opposite end of Edgeware. And they had a son who was a year younger than I, David, and a little girl, Janice, who was about seven, at that time, six or seven. And this family was financially much poorer than the Rhodes family. I think if anything, they would have taken something away from themselves in order to be able to give it to me, rather than have me suffer in any way. And they knew that I had been hungry in the other family, so they almost forced me. I had to finally say, please, I don't eat anymore. And in September, I went back to school. And by that time, somehow over the summer, I seemed to have somehow picked up an awful lot of English, because I was able to really begin to participate in what was going on in school and in the classroom and so on. I wish I had kept the essays that I wrote, because the English must have been really strange. Soon after I got to the Simmons family, because I got there in late August, middle of August, I think, 1939, I remember that Sunday morning when war was declared, listening to the radio and war being declared, and realizing what this meant, that now my parents couldn't get out of Germany, that now we would probably not be able to correspond with each other anymore, and wondering how long will this last, thinking World War I lasted 4 years, is this going to last 4 years? What's going to happen to my parents? What's going to happen to me? I just, the whole thing was a big question to me. And I remember after listening to it on the radio, very almost immediately afterwards, I think the air raid siren went off, and we all crouched underneath the dining room table. And we had already been issued gas masks, and I remember I took my gas mask out of the case and had it ready to slip on, because I was sure I was going to need it immediately. And after the, and being absolutely petrified, knowing that we were going to be bombed and that we were going to be bombed, this house was going to be bombed and there was going to be gas and stuff. And when the air raid warning cleared, I really wanted some time alone by myself, and I wanted to go upstairs to be by myself. And as I was going upstairs, I put my hand on the banister, and there was a bee there, and it stung me. And I guess I'd never been stung by a bee before, and I had an allergic reaction to that bee sting and passed out, fell backwards down the stairs. But the family didn't know that I had been stung by a bee, and they didn't know. They thought it was probably I was upset, which may have helped. I don't know. When I came to, by the time my hand was all swollen, my parents and I were able to remain in contact with each other, though not the way it was before, not as frequently. For instance, we had friends in Switzerland, and as well as in Holland, and both of them being neutral countries, my parents would write to those people, and they would take it out of the would write a letter to me. They would take it out of the envelope and readdress a new envelope and send it on to me, and I did them the same thing. And then there were also Red Cross messages, but you could only write 25 words, which wasn't very much. And also, you had to be careful. I mean, I couldn't talk about London because, you know, in case the letters were opened by the censor, and some of them were opened by the censor. I don't know, maybe all of mine were open. I don't really know this, but I know some of the letters that came from Germany to Holland or to Switzerland, apparently, were opened by the censor. And there were a number of things that happened in Germany, in Kippenheim, and to my parents, that I never knew, that all these things I found out much later. For instance, my parents had to move out of the house because Jews were congregated together in one area, and so they were not allowed to. But I didn't know this. And the village was, then the families that who forwarded the letters also didn't say this to me, and maybe they didn't know. The village was so small, all you needed to do was write the name in the village, and it would arrive there. We continued to stay in touch with each other until October 22nd, 1940. All the Jews from that section of Germany were deported to France. I learned about this from somebody who was from Kittenheim, who lived in England, who read it in a paper, showed me the newspaper, and I denied it. I said, but not my parents. I will get a letter from my parents. It takes a long time these days for mail to come, but I will hear from my parents. And they are still in Kittenheim. And he tried to convince me that that wasn't so, but I denied that. And I think that was perhaps the first time that I was, or the beginning of many years of lots of denial on my part. I finally did receive a letter from my parents from France. And their new address was at the top of the letter, and my father writes saying, as you will notice from the top of the address on the top of the letter, we moved. That's really a euphemism. I mean, they were deported. Apparently, they were given an hour's notice. I mean, this is not something I know from my parents. This is all information I found out afterwards. They were given an hour's notice. They were allowed to take with them 100 pounds of whatever they wanted to, and some money, it was a fixed amount of money, I don't know how much. Much of that, what they took with them, was taken from them by the Nazis on the train on the way to France. They were sent to Camp de Gurs, which is in the foothills of the Pyrenean Mountains in France. The camp, prior to that time, had been established during the Spanish Civil War when refugees were coming across the Pyrenean Mountains into France, and they were housed in those camps. When the Jews from that section of Germany where I come from were brought there, there were still some of those Spanish refugees there. Not many, but some of them were still there. Men and women were separate in the camp. All of my family were deported there. My mother's father became ill very quickly there. He had to keep a special kind of diet because of some stomach condition that he had, and of course he couldn't. And he died there in December 1940. My mother wrote to me about this. But my parents never, ever told me the horrendous conditions in this camp, that they were starving, that the sanitary conditions were awful, that it was bitter cold there, there was no heat. All of that I found out much, much later. In the spring of 1941, my father was sent to another camp, to Camp de Mille, which is near Marseille. And in order to stay in touch with each other and with me, because they were allowed only to write one page a week, and that much they didn't tell me then, my father would write one page, send it on to my mother, and she'd write on the reverse side and then mail it to me. And then the next week she would write one page, send it to my father, and he'd write on the reverse side. And I have, to this day, still all those letters that my parents sent to me. I, of course, was able to write to them as often as I wanted to, and as much as I wanted to. And it was perhaps an aberration of the war, but they were able to put a French stamp on it and send it directly to England. It would always go through the censor and be opened. And I'm assuming that my letters were also opened. At one point in early 1942, I learned that one could send money to the camp, to the people in the camp, and that there was a canteen there where you could buy such exotic things as bananas and oranges when they were on a starvation diet. And I sent my parents money, and the money that I sent them came from a stamp collection that I sold in England. And the stamp collection has a history. When I was leaving Germany, I wanted to take it with me, and the Nazis did not permit that I take that with me because it was something of value. And so my parents told me, you can't take it. And I was not going to leave Germany if I couldn't take my stamps. And my parents said, well, you know, we'll leave them with somebody and we will get them someday. You know, when we leave Germany, we will leave them with somebody. We'll get them someday. Don't worry about it. But I was not going to leave without my stamps. And so before I left Germany, every night, for several nights in a row, with a flashlight underneath my covers in my bed, I took every stamp out of the stamp album. And then my suitcases had been packed under the supervision of somebody from customs, so that when I get to the customs center, I wouldn't have to go through my suitcases being inspected and having to repack them.